This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 471 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and TotalSaddleFit.com. Today, we interview a gated dressage expert, Jenny Ball Jackson, by special request of an auditor, and Philip and I will take you through the details of First Level Test 3, and we have an interesting training tip about the origins of the dressage letters. This is Reese Koffler-Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
This is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, Reese. You did a good job with the intro.
You're professional. I'm getting there. But we're having a little trouble with Phil's sound, so I took over the reins, but I'm always happy to hand that back to you next week. Well, Phil, we have gotten some great feedback about our announcement last week, which has been so nice. We've gotten lots of emails and Facebook shout-outs about becoming the official podcast of USDF, and we really want to thank everybody for those kind words.
Yeah, we love the support, and we love the USDF as well for bringing us along with them. And we can have a USDF episode every month.
Yeah. So we're really looking forward to it. So I hope too. How's it going with the book club, Phil?
So far, I have not gotten my book in the mail yet, but I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. But they're just going to send it over. It's just crossing the border and, you know, that kind of issue or whatever.
That
I don't know.
That makes it a little more challenging, doesn't it?
For sure. For the mail stuff. And I think our mail is a little slow as well up here. But it's okay. I'm excited to get to it. I'm going to tear through that book. I'm really looking forward to reading it, learning all the great stuff, and then talking about it on the show next month.
So just a reminder, we have a book club running. We're really looking forward to all of this. And I hope that everybody enjoys. You can find more information on our Facebook page. But also, just to remind you, we are, for this month, reading When Two Spines Align, Dressage Dynamic, by Beth Baumert. And we're going to discuss with one of our listeners and auditors at the first show of every month. So you have a month. I know there was a little criticism that we gave you guys a month. I hear ya, but get on it. And I think you'll like this book. We went with a month. But I hope you get on it and get reading and or get your book. You still have time. And actually, when you get into the book, it's a pretty quick read. Or I think you'll find some exercises and things that will work well for your horse. So we hope you get going with us. That sounds great. Well, we have a great first guest. I hope everybody enjoys. She is a gated dressage expert, Jenny Jackson. Well, tonight, by special request from one of our auditors who's been asking for quite a long time to get some information about gated dressage, we have Jenny Ball Jackson. She's the co-founder of Dressage and Gate on the show. Welcome, Jenny, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jenny, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started with gated dressage.
Okay, well, I was doing versatility with the Tennessee Walking Horses back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And in the early 90s, we started just applying dressage to our gated horses and how wonderfully it worked. And then we started asking the shows, the different show secretaries and management, to start allowing us to have dressage classes. And in the late 90s is when the International in Tennessee hosted two classes, intro and training level, basically. So it was quite an adventure because of the differences and the conflict that we ran into with traditional, what I'll call traditional dressage, which are what I call the trot horses, is they thought we wanted to compete with them. And it was, no, we want to compete with ourselves. It's not that we understand that our horses move hollow in their intermediate gait. So therefore, you know, we don't want our horses to trot. We want to keep our inherited gait, and but yet we like the discipline of dressage, and we want to use principles to get our horses in shape, make our horses less hollow. And so with our gated horses, now, when I say gated horses, I mean all of them. From your Peruvian Pasos, your Pasofinos, walking horses, Icelandic Foxtrotters, all those guys that do a what we call an intermediate gait. We don't trot.
Maybe we can get a little bit more explanation about the gated horses and about how the intermediate gait differs from a trot.
The gated horse does everything your traditional walk horse, as far as the walk is concerned and the canter is concerned. We want the horse, our gated horses, to have a traditional walk and canter. So the only thing that is different is the intermediate gait, which is either a broken lateral gait or a broken diagonal gait. So we, on the gated horses, especially when we're talking about the walking horse in general, we want that overstride to not only be 4 inches, but 6, 7, 8, up to 12 to 15 inches overstride. And that fall foot pattern would be a broken lateral pattern. And a true trot is 2 beat, and a true pace is 2 beat. So a trot is a diagonal pair hitting the ground together, and the pace is the lateral hair hitting the ground together. So what we want to do is we don't want to trot and we don't want to pace. So let's take that arm that swings from the trot to the pace, and let's swing it straight up. And the straight up part would be what we call our intermediate
in between.
Okay.
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 So many competitions? Yeah. Is there many dressage competitions for gated horses? Like, is this a sport that's growing and you're seeing more and more, you know, people coming along with it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, since the Western dressage was accepted by USEF, it has really grown immensely, because now we get men that say, you know what, I don't want to wear the chod pants or the high boots, but, you know, I'll put on a pair of chaps, cowboy hat. And right. That's been really a wonderful thing, because we still have the discipline, even if you just changed your attire, basically. It's the same thing. What we're asking the horse to be a good load carrier, and we're asking the rider to become a better load to carry. So we're still keeping the discipline of dressage, but yet we're opening it up with WDDA, Western Dressage Association. And with Western Dressage, when they were accepted with USEF a few years ago, they allowed the gated horse to come along with them.
Producer Jen here. The gated dressage uses the training scale, just like trot dressage, we'll say it that way, or Western Dressage. Everybody uses the training scale. So when you first start working on dressage principles with your gated horse, what might be, you have Georgette the trail rider sitting on her Florida Cracker gated horse, and all she's ever done is trail ride with him. She's never tried to do any type of training to change the horse's natural balance that he just happens to use because that's what he likes. What might be the first few things that they start to work on? They're going to go in the arena and they're going to start doing some gated dressage. What might be some things that a typical gated dressage instructor like yourself would work on with that person?
Well, the first thing that we want to introduce to this rider, this particular rider, is usually a snaffle bit.
Right. Okay,
that's
a good start.
Good start.
Mostly because you're going to find most of the riders riding in a curb bit. Because that's just what they're handed when they buy a gated horse. It's like, ride Charlie in this, and he'll be a good boy, and he'll stay gating the rest of his life. Well, that's not a fact. First of all, so what we want to teach the horse, this gated horse, first, is to, when I apply the left leg in his side, he's to move his left hip.
Gotcha.
Move away with his left hip.
Okay.
And so then we do both sides. And so once we get that, the pivot on the forehand, and the rider understands it, the horse understands, to move away from pressure, and then we get up in the saddle. And then with me on the ground and the rider on the back, we apply that leg, and then I apply my pressure, and you keep the horse, again, just with a little bent to the inside leg, and ask the horse to move away from that inside leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds, oh my gosh, that's what my four-year-old learns, you know, within 6 months, but these gated horses do not learn this. And
right,
it's very
right.
sad, because remember, they have a curb bit in their mouth, and they weren't ever taught lateral control. All they understand is longitudinal front to back, which you know and I know, that's way, way later. And so they put a curb bit, obviously, too fast in their mouth. But that's just what these people are taught out there. So I may sound like I'm really grassroots, bare bones.
The basics are the most important things. I mean, you know, from any dressage perspective, it's really, you know, honing in those basics and making it work for riders and making riders understand and horses understand. And, you know, I think all the dressages are the same. All the training is the mm-hmm. same. You know, when your basics are good, then you can move forward and there's other things to do, but they all rely on really simple concepts that you have to be able to do really well in a relaxed environment and on demand. So it sounds to me like, you know, whether it's a gated horse or a trotting horse or an upside down horse or a backwards horse, I mean, it's all the same principle.
Yeah.
And absolutely. There's people out there that are teaching this, and that's really wonderful. It sounds like, you know, you're introducing this to maybe new people or a new area, and I think that's just like Western dressage as it comes along. I mean, it's great. It's wonderful, and it can be helpful for all horses.
It is a discipline that is for all horses, and it's a springboard into whatever you want to do. You know, if you want to do endurance riding, well, you ride your horse in a hollow frame for 50 miles, you're going to have a sore horse at the end of that trail ride. But if you teach him to round and soften his back, therefore, again, I'm looking for the horse longevity. I'm looking for the horse to last and, you know, not to go lame in his teens.
Well, it's fantastic. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can kind of get from your training and from the gated dressage is it's really dressage for every horse. And that's what we like to hear. And it's phenomenal. So we'd love to thank you for your time today. And if our listeners have any questions, we had some special requests for you to come on the show. So how can they find you online?
Well, you can reach me through my website. It's forbeatdressage.com. And I do clinics, 3-4-day clinics, all over the United States and in Canada. So,
great.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks
really
so much. That was lots
me.
Of fun. Have a great evening. Well, that was fun. We always like to help, you know, if listeners want a question, we will get it answered. So we enjoyed that very much. And so after this commercial break from Kentucky Performance Products, we're going to come back with our series on the highest test of the level. And we're going to talk about the first part of First Level Test 3.
Hi, Glenda Geek here from the Horse Radio Network, and I'm here with Karen from Kentucky Performance Products with a sensible supplementing tip of the week. Well, Karen, this week we're talking about an article that you wrote actually on your website at kppusa.com called Does Your Horse Need Extra Vitamins? And that's a great question because I don't think people are ever quite sure whether they need vitamins or not.
No, and I think a lot of people don't realize that actually their horses do create a certain number of vitamins within their body. So there's some things that they really don't need if they're healthy and they're not stressed. But, you know, vitamins are organic compounds. And when they're provided in the proper amounts, they play a major role in the well-being of your horse. So, I mean, they have to have them. There are two basic types of vitamins. There are fat-soluble vitamins and water-soluble vitamins. And the fat-soluble vitamins, and many people may remember this from their biology classes in high school, are A, D, E, and K. And all in the world that means fat-soluble is that they're stored in the body. They're either stored in the liver or they're stored in fatty tissues. Now, it does mean that you have to be a little bit careful with some of those vitamins so that you don't give a horse too many of them. So that's something to keep in mind. Vitamin E in particular is one of the more commonly fed fat-soluble vitamins, but it's very, very hard to feed too much vitamin E. They haven't even really been able to show that it's toxic at all. So that's one of the vitamins that you don't have to worry about too much in a horse. Horses actually do require a certain amount of fat in their diets in order to properly absorb these fat-soluble vitamins in their small intestines. There is a small amount of fat in hays and grasses and most of the grains that we feed, but it is a good idea sometimes to feed a little bit extra fat to your horse. It will help them absorb these fat-soluble vitamins. Believe it or not, horses can synthesize vitamin D from sunlight just like people can. So very rarely do we have to supplement vitamin D. And the microbes in the hind gut can synthesize vitamin K. So you don't really have to worry about vitamin D and vitamin K in horses. Vitamin A is also made out of beta carotene, which is found in grass. So if your horse is getting some grass, they're usually getting enough vitamin A. So vitamin E of the fat-soluble vitamins is the essential one that you need to be sure your horse is getting enough of, because unless they're eating a lot of grass, they're probably not getting enough vitamin E. So you need to watch out for that one.
Okay.
Water-soluble vitamins. Those are the B complex vitamins and vitamin C. Now, water-soluble vitamins are not stored in the body. Your horse eats them, and he either urinates or defecates them away. Whatever he doesn't need, he kind of gets rid of. Everybody knows about the B-complex vitamins. They have different names. They have names and numbers. So B1 is thiamine, riboflavin is B2, niacin is B3, and, you know, you can kind of look those up. One of the ones that we are all aware of is B7, which is biotin. And biotin is one of the B vitamins that we have to watch for in horses. All the B-complex vitamins are available in pasture, fresh plant material. And also the good bugs in the hindgut will synthesize a lot of the B vitamins. So like vitamins like B1, 2, 3, 6 and 12 are all synthesized in the horse's body, so they're not considered essential. And unless a horse is very stressed or is having problems with their digestive tract, those vitamins are supplied. Biotin is synthesized in the gut as well, but we don't feel that some horses will not synthesize enough. So if you have a horse that's having trouble with their feet, giving them additional biotin is a good idea. Vitamin C is an interesting one. Horses can synthesize vitamin C from the glucose in their liver. And if a horse is not stressed, they will produce enough vitamin C. You have to be careful supplementing vitamin C because you can actually turn off that process, and then you can get your horse in trouble because they won't make their own anymore. So vitamin C, it's good to not supplement a lot of that.
It's a good thing because my horse won't drink orange juice anyway, Karen. So,
yeah, you think about it, horses aren't eating a lot of
No.
So those are some of the vitamins that are out there. And as you can see, your horse actually gets a lot of them on his own. Horses that might need extra vitamins are those that are limited, have limited access to fresh grass or that are eating poor quality hay. Horses in high stress situations like that are traveling frequently or are being relocated. Young growing horses need more vitamins because they have rapid bone and muscular growth, so they need more. Mares in the last trimester of pregnancy or those that are lactating typically will need additional vitamins. And any horse that's recovering from a trauma, either illness or surgery, could benefit from some extra vitamins. So the best thing to do is kind of look at your diet. That'll give you some idea of what vitamins are being provided. And again, if the horse isn't getting grass, and vitamin E is definitely something you need to think of.
Well, that's terrific. Now, I think one of the services that Kentucky Performance Products has provided to our listeners in the past is actually being able to get a hold of you guys and to ask the questions to find out where their horses might be lacking and which products fit specific needs. So how do they do that?
Well, absolutely. There's multiple different ways that you can get in touch with us, depending on, you know, what you're most comfortable with or what time of day it is. If you jump up in the middle of the night and you go, oh my goodness, you know, you can always shoot us an email. And if you go to our website and go to our contact page, there's an email called info@kppusa.com. And you can contact us there. You can contact us if you're on Facebook. You can leave a question on Facebook. You can either leave it on the page live or you can send us an independent message. That would be considered private. You can also call us anytime. And those phone numbers are on our contact page as well. So we are not here on the weekends, but I do monitor the Facebook page on the weekends. So if your question comes up on a weekend, go to Facebook and ask us. Also, if you go to any of our articles and tips and topics and you have a question once you've finished reading it, go ahead and put that question in the comments and we'll respond to it. So there's multiple ways you can find us.
And I know many of our listeners in the past have contacted you directly and had their problems solved. So feel free to get a hold of them over at Kentucky Performance Products. Go to kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com.
Well, Phil, we are both sort of in the midst of show season now. We just went to a horse show over the weekend, and we had a great time. It was the first time I've gone to a horse show in a long time for fun. That makes sense.
For fun and a purpose.
Exactly. But, you know, I took my own horse to a horse show. And my expectation was actually pretty low. I think that kind of warranted it, and that's where I'm going with this, is I think when you go to a horse show, it's very important to have an expectation of what you're going to the horse show for, especially because I took Follow Me. Everybody's been asking me how he's doing. And Big Mike, I took Big Mike to this horse show. And then my assistant, Ashley Rand, took her new horse, Fendi Fabulo, to his first horse show with them together. So we had some pretty clear goals on what we were doing at the show.
Are those goals just getting through the test? Is that what I'm hearing here?
That's what you're hearing.
Pretty low?
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Sir. You're okay. Feeling what I'm putting down here. Well, you know, fair. Follow Me is in a weird stage in the sense of he's 6 years old. And I do feel like he needs to go to horse shows. He needs to go to horse shows. And he is really good at first level test three, like a champion. So we're going to talk about first level test three here in a minute in our series. But he's a champion at first three. So I really wanted to step it up into the second level range, which is, as we talked about before, it's a huge jump. It's a huge jump between first level and second level. First level test three and second level test three. So I knew I was taking him. I entered the horse show. Partly because it kind of spurred me on to better greatness. You know, it spurred me on to really asking him some hard questions in training. And he's 6 years old, so he's not an old guy, but he needs to go to horse shows. So I went ahead and I wanted to see sort of where I was. And I was happy. I mean, he won both his classes, so that was great. But we definitely need some more work. We need some more work in the collection. And where I'm going with this is, I thought it was a very successful weekend. We only had a couple moments where, you know that movie, I forget what it is, but it's like, squirrel, pay attention. And we did that a few times. It was more, there was a puppy.
Well, attention deficit.
Attention deficit. We had that a little bit. But, I mean, that's what you get when you show a six-year-old that doesn't have a lot of show experience. So so we had a break in the medium trot. I mean, it just wasn't as polished as it would like. So it really kind of now, it gave me a nice gauge to say, okay, you know what? We're going to wait another couple months. We're going to work a little bit harder on that, and we'll go back again. So, but where I'm going, I didn't knock the scores out of the park. I got okay scores. It was good enough to win, but I think it's always good as you go to a horse show, you're going to be tested. You're also going, I don't need to be told I'm amazing. I mean, it's always nice to be told you're amazing, but you're going to a horse show because I can do it in my arena here at my house by myself with nothing going on, I can do a fairly good test. I mean, I can probably get, in my mind, at least kind of upper 60s, low 70s, in my mind. That's not Phil, everybody, here coaching. But in my mind, you know, I'm like, okay, I mean, I can achieve all the movements and all those things. But it's really different when you have to go to a horse show and have to do it in the arena. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, and riding kind of a greener horse, I got a good reminder of, you know, the golf cart going by and attention and all those things. So that's kind of what happened to us this weekend.
I think it can still be fun. I think it can still be fun with these things that go on, as long as you don't think it's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And then you just be happy. And, you know, and the judges are paid to be critical. That's not really in their nature of most judges. That's just their job to sit there in the booth and be critical. So,
I
think you still have a good time and take the advice that they give and take the criticisms as well as the good things that they say and, you know, carry on and just do another show.
Yeah. And I think that, exactly. And I think my takeaway from this horse show, this particular horse show, was everyone was complaining about the judging. The judge is this and the judge is that. And I will be honest, I had, there were three horses. I also, a student of mine went and three of us went. And I felt like if you really sat down and read what the judge was saying, I happen to agree in my particular case. I mean, mine were pretty obvious. You can't have a break and get a good score. But it was good to step back, but I think it was really good for us as a group to remember, yes, sometimes you get a bad score, but you got to look at why you got a bad score. And you got to really take a deep breath, maybe not at that moment.
But take criticism well. You got to take it as someone trying to help you, just like in a lesson. Like your coach is criticizing you and telling you how to do it better, and the judge is just another type of coaching. It gets written down. You get a score. Yes. You know, you get a mark, and it's very hard to take. You know, on your ego. That's, you know, something you have to learn very early on in riding dressage, is to, you know, put the ego to one side and try and take out of what the judge is criticizing and say, you know, I can really work on that. I can really, you know, make that better. I can sit down with my coach when they have time to improve on that and come back and show that, you know, go to another show and say, okay, this is something I really wanted to improve, whether it's one or two things in your test, and improve that.
Yes, agreed.
And just improve one little box from a 5 to a 6 or a 5 to a 7, you know, just one little box at a time.
Yeah.
You can work on it. And you know, don't have such a big ego that you can't take that criticism.
And, exactly.
You know,
and
nobody's saying you're a bad rider. Nobody's saying that you don't know what you're doing or all of these things that you get in your head when you get a score that isn't what you thought you should get. Just be okay with it. Work on it. Back and do it again.
And go back and do it again. And I think that's what I saw kind of generally. Like I said, it was pretty easy for me to do that because I had an expectation going to the horse show. I knew there were some things we did well and the things we didn't do well. Unfortunately, the second day, we have great simple changes. It's like our highlight and it did not go well. but, you know, it happens, right? Again, we lost a little attention and then didn't pay attention. So, but I think that's exactly where I was going with this, is you can't always blame the judges. Like, that is a very hard job. And I think if people, you know, it's kind of a little bit of our pet peeve. I think, Phil, I'm putting you in there with me. It's a little bit of a pet peeve, you know. It's not always the judges. And I think you really have to step back and say, okay, what are we looking at here? So that was my wrap up and take from the horse show, is just step back when you have a minute. It was hot. Have a drink of any kind of beverage. It doesn't matter. Sit down. Read your test in a clear mind, and not that the judge hates you or I don't believe judges sit back there. That's a hard job. And I think they truly want to do well for the sport. So anyways, that was my little bit of soapboxing for today. So
two cents.
Yeah, that
I
was
think
my two
what
cents.
We were going to do here, Reese, is go through first level test 3.
Yeah. So we're back on our
try
series.
Try and break it down a little bit, movement and by movement.
Yes.
And see if we can help anybody with all the little details and all the little polished moments that you need to do to be, you know, to be hitting 70s at first level.
Absolutely.
That's what we hope.
We want everybody.
We're encouraging everybody to go out there and get
So for our new listeners that may have joined us from the USDF podcast, we've started this series, and you can always go back to our shows before and search. But this was, I think, two shows ago. We started talking about how to, there's a book I found at the Half Price Bookstore, How to Ride a Winning Dressage Test, A Judge's Guide to Step-by-Step Improvement by General Jonathan Burton, by General Burton. So it's a great book. It's an old book, but Phil and I really liked it and kind of spurred us on to thinking.
We're sort of adapting it for our own purposes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we brought up the first level test three. You know, the tests on the internet have the directives, which we really like. And we like, you know, to talk about those through each movement. And like I said, really help people to really get
these qualifying scores and get to regionals.
Exactly.
All right. So, you ready, Phil? So, first level test three, it starts with A, enter working trot, X, halt, salute, proceed, working trot. So I always get the center lines. I like this. But one of the things that I like to think about and tell my students is to make sure you have a plan around the arena, that you don't just go in there and sort of like a balloon, let the air out. You know, go in, have a little bit of a plan as you go through and you're doing this. So, for example, this weekend on Follow Me, I was cantering around. He needed to sort of get in there and move around a little bit and stay in front of my leg. So that was what I did. But so then you want
to
think.
I like to, sorry, I was just going to say, at first level, I like to do, you know, trot up and make a halt and trot out. I might be able to do that twice before the judge rings the bell. I think that's really, for me, a really good idea because that's how the test starts. So I do it once or twice before I actually go in. The horse is used to doing it. That helps to settle the nerves a little bit. And then we can just, you know, the bell rings and I just, you know, I'll be doing it the second or the third time already. So no problem. Down the center line. Salute. Immobility is so important. People are so keen to start their test that they halt, they barely salute, and then they're off again. I think that's sort of a mistake, you know, because it sets sort of a nervous tone for the horses.
Well, and that's true. And I think, you know, you want to make sure that your horse is sharp, is going to trot. You know, in first level test three, you have to trot halt and trot out. You can no longer walk into the halt in first level. And also, as it stands right now, you can either post or sit all of the trot movements. So you want to make sure the horse is in front of your aids and is obedient, that you have a nice straight center line, which is actually a little bit tricky. And then you want to make sure that the horse stays straight as you make your turn to the left. So Phil, it's track left, HXF change rein, lengthen stride and trot, and F working trot.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see people as they practice this test and then as they ride it in the arena is that don't get their length and strides soon enough. So you got to be, you know, if it says HXF, change rein, length and stride, at H, you got to be lengthening. At F, you got to be shortening.
Yeah. And the transition.
You know, we see a little bit too much of a crescendo effect. And I think we talked about that in a different interview, but sort of like X, you have three strides of your beautiful length and trot, and then it kind of peters out. So, you know, somebody's building towards the beautiful strides and then sort of petering out as you get to F. Really, what you want to be doing is showing your transition at H and a different transition at F. You know, really, the same, you know, each stride of the lengthening is the same. So, for top marks, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
By the time you get to first level test three, that's what you should be doing. In first level test one, for your first lengthening, you know, that you're doing in a ring or whatever, a little bit of that crescendo is sort of fine. But here you want to see, you know, turn the corner, out of the corner, boom, go. And then, you know, go. Refresh actually on the second quarter line. So you're not just sort of slowing down as you approach the wall. And then you get the wall and you shorten that stride and the horse is in good balance. That you didn't pull the reins too hard and stop the horse's energy, but you kind of gather it up and create a little bit the first ideas of collection. Then you will get marks, promise.
Yeah, I love it. So then this is where I think this test gets tricky, and I think you really need to train this movement because you're going to come around the short side, and from K to X, you leg yield right, and X to H, you leg yield left. So one of the things that I see is that people, you need to be ready to leg yield, not preparing to leg yield at K. You need to be ready to be going sideways, or even for me, going a step sideways already before you hit the marker. Because if you don't, you're going to end up halfway down the long side and then really and have to go to the side.
Nowhere near X. Yeah, we see that. Nowhere near X.
The judge is sitting right there so they can see all of it. So that is bad. So you need to make sure.
I actually tell riders to, I tell riders to cut the corner, actually.
Yeah.
Not ride that corner too deep. Mm-hmm. Have your outside bend established in the corner.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And not wait.
Normally the judge, unless it's really egregious, really obvious, but cheat in the corner, cut it out a little bit, have your outside bend established. A little, but have your outside bend established. And then, before you get to, like you said, Reese, before you get to letter, give that horse a real strong aid, because it's all horses. They like to be magnetized into the wall, into the nice kickboards that what they're used to, right? Or the little white fence. Yep. The hardest step to make in leg yield here is the first step.
First. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You'll find you get one or two steps, you get away from the wall a little bit. The horse is a little bit like, oh, okay. And then you'll make it to X, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a little late with this, or you're not strong enough with that outside leg, or even a little tap with the outside to say, get away from the wall. And then you'll, like, as soon as you're away from the wall, magnetism breaks and now you're moving sideways. So that's my little tip there. Prepare your outside bend early. Don't too deep in the corner and like you'll like strong aid, get them off the wall.
Get them off the wall. And make sure here, I think the rider position and the leg yield's really important. And again, the judge is right in front of you. So you need to have your weight and your outside seat bone, which in this case is the right, because you are leg yielding to the right. And then at X, you need to change the horse's positioning. And again, don't go past X, because that also, so the stride before X is when you want to think, I'm going to push them straight, I'm going to change the bend, and then I'm going to go to the left. Okay, so Phil, we've just finished the leg yield. And so movement 5 is C, circle right 20 meters in rising trot, allowing the horse to stretch forward and downward before C, shorten the reins, C, working trot. Our favorite stretch circle is back.
Well, we've had a couple of episodes where we've talked about this, and this is a very important movement, coefficient of 2. So we're looking for maximum stretch. That's basically, judges are not happy, not going to give you an 8 or a 9 unless that horse's nose is in front of the vertical and down towards the ground.
It's true.
Every horse does this a little bit differently, but I really prepare the horse by encouraging a little bit of bend in the corner, a little bit of bend coming up to the circle, so they're to my outside, connected to my outside rein, so that when I give the outside rein, they actually go down and towards it. I think that's a really, inside leg to outside rein, really important concept. And it really can help you here in this stretch.
Yes.
So we don't want to see, be careful for overbending, because then you're just causing a little bit loss of balance when the nose is too far to the inside. Just practice. And we talked about just doing it gradually, that's another good concept. And
I think it's good. And I think the only other thing I would say is I think it's important that as you do the movement that a lot of people will ask the horse to stretch and then maybe halfway around the circle ask again, but there's still contact in the stretch. And so don't just let the horse go flat.
Yeah,
and
it's not a free
walk,
right?
It's not a free for all. Yeah, exactly. You need to still have contact and you need to be suppling and doing those things. So I love it. Okay. So then we go to our circle right 10 meters. I find, Phil, the people don't get the geometry right on this bad boy.
this is a little bit of a hard question for your first level horse.
I
see all kinds of problems, a little bit too much. Overbending is one of the biggest problems. And a 10 meter circle actually tests your ability to maintain the horse fairly straight and really balanced. That means outside rein is so important here. And as I train the horse and as I ride the horse, I actually will take a little counter bend to my 10 meter circle. So the horse learns to turn the shoulders. That's the question of the 10 meter circle, is can the horse shorten the stride a little bit and turn the shoulders? But, you know, when we see riders riding this the first time or training this, they think, okay, 10-meter circle, it's more bend, like lots and lots of bend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they end up cranking on the inside rein, and the horse's outside shoulder falls out, and we get a lot of different iterations of what happens at that point. So, you know, think of reducing the bend from a 20-meter circle and getting the shoulder around a little bit more. And then you're getting, you know, the idea and the concept of a small circle better. And then you reintroduce the bend back in. What you're really trying to do is keep the bend through the horse's body. Like, you the small circle increases the bend from wither to tail and reduces it from wither to ears. If you think about that, you'll do a better job.
Good one, Phil. No, it's true. And just remember the geometry too, right?
Yeah.
There is 12 across, meters.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 12 meters between the markers. So you need to go halfway between, or just a little bit shy of halfway between, is 5 meters. So check your geometry on that. I think that's super important as you go through.
If you cross the center line, that's where the judge is sitting. So they're going to know that more than, more than anything else. You know, so, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, so you have to be careful there.
When you start it, look at the center line, and when you're halfway done, look back at the wall.
Yeah, that's true. And you're halfway between R and M and R and B, so, or just under, because it's 12 meters. So, yeah, and then this is a good test of your half halt, actually, because you're going to turn right at B. You're going to halt at X, and you're going to proceed working trot in E, track left. So, this one you got to pay attention to, because again, you don't want to miss the mark because the judge is sitting at the center line. So you need to make sure your halt is immobile. Your halt is square. You have to make sure that is actually a square turn as you go. It's not a round turn. It's a square turn.
So yeah, if we talk about the outside rein again here.
Again.
If your horse is overbending, he's going to blow the turn for sure. Reduce the bend, or when you're training, take a little outside bend. You got to be able to get those shoulders around so that by the quarter line, basically, you're straight, and by the center line, you're halted.
Straight and square. And so this takes some practice, because you really, the horses go, they make the turn, they fall on their forehand, and then you have to halt. And if you ride a big giraffe like I do, you've got to really have them paying attention to that movement.
I got to brag a little bit, because I got an 8 on this, like my last show 2 weeks ago.
Oh, see, Phil's perfect. I'm just kidding.
Well, 8 is not perfect, but
that's pretty good.
Pretty good. I was pretty good on this one.
But it's good training, right? I mean, that tells you, you know, every halt you train, you should train square anyways. And so, you know, it's a good thing. That's excellent. Good job, Phil. I don't mean to be teasing you. All right. So then you're going to turn left, and V, you're going to do a circle left 10 meters. Same thing applies to the left as it does the right. I would just say be careful to not overbend. I would say probably 80 or 90% of my riders have left rein overbending disease. Because most of the horses are hollow to the left. So riders pull a little bit more because it feels like the horse is bending more. Well, actually, the horse's hind legs are going to, right, their outside hind legs are going to fall out more just by the definition of the hollow. That's not all the time, but left rein disease is pervasive. So you have to be careful. You've got that outside rein. Yeah, it's out there.
Don't catch that.
Yeah. And again, you visualize and you know your marks, because you don't want to lose a point. It drives me crazy when people lose point on geometry. Don't lose points in your geometry, because it's already hard enough. You don't want to be doing that.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth, at TotalSaddleFit.com.
Well, Phil, we've got a great Total Saddle Fit tip of the week, but we wanted to start talking about the shoulder relief synthetic girth. This is such a good girth for this time of the year, don't you think?
I think so. It's hot now here in Canada, so we're seeing a lot of sweaty horses, you know, which can be a problem, because then the tack need, you know, the leather tack needs so much more attention. Synthetic is the way to go in this weather. I think, you know, it has all the same properties of the fit of a shoulder relief girth, just in a synthetic version. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And we all know I like to hose girths. So this one, Justin doesn't get mad at me that I tell him I hose it. So you can hose this one. It's great. We use it all the time, and it's a really good girth. So
the price point is a big advantage too. You know, so I think it's good that, you know, you can get a shoulder relief girth in all the different price points, and everybody can get one. All the horses can have one.
Yep, I love it. I love it. Well, Phil, I was cleaning my files and I found the coolest thing. I kept it, obviously, because it is from 2005. That's how deep I was in my files. But I kept it. So it's actually the story behind the dressage letters, two possible explanations, and it's from Euro Dressage. So take it away, Phil.
Well, it's a little history lesson here and maybe an explanation. So this little article says that the letters were not used until international competitions began with the Olympics in the 1900s. The first competition in 1912 did not have letters. Sorry, interesting. A lot of little interesting facts here. No Olympics were held in 1960 or one. And then the letters just appeared in the 1920 Olympics, as nobody has ever been able to find out the origins, although people have various theories. The first theory is that the letters were the first letters of the names of cities conquered by the Romans. Okay, if you like that explanation.
You like that one?
And here we have a second possibility for the explanation for the letters. So it appears that in old imperial German court, the walls of the stables, or the yard, were marked with the letters indicating where each courtier and or rider's horse was to be stood to await its rider. So at K, they had the king or the Kaiser. At F, they had the first. So that's the, you know, the German name is the first or prince. P is the Ferdinand or Ostler. I'm not sure what kind of courtier that is.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
V, vassal. We don't have a explanation for that one. E, Edling or guest of honor. Okay. B, Bannerträger, the standard bearer. I think I have to get a history lesson
here. Yeah, we're
going
to have to look this up here.
S for Schanzkanzler or Chancellor of Echter. I do know English mostly and a little bit of German. R for Ritter or Knight. That's an easy one. M for Meyer or Steward. And H for Hofmarschall Lord Chancellor. However, in the 1920 Olympics, the letters in the center line were also used A, D, L, X, I, G, and C.
Huh.
So, I don't think either explanation is perfect, but
no,
it's something.
But it's I thought it was kind of cool. So I enjoyed that. So
well, I mean, it's better than before this little article. I had nothing.
I know. So I when I found this, I thought, oh, that's kind of exciting. So I like it. Well, as always, we love it when we get ideas for our Total Saddle Fit Tip of the Week, and we love email and Facebook shout outs. Feel free to send them to us. Well, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is on Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors this week for allowing us to put on a good show. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we'll talk to you next week.